Campus FM gli presenta Storia Oggett, le produzioni e presentazioni tra Emanuel Buttigieg e Liam Gauci.
Dr. Maud Olivia proudly received the constitutional instruments and displayed them to the people.
Combattenti! Terra, mare e l'aria!
And unless it was possible to change Mr. Mintoff's mind, I do not believe that the facilities that he was prepared to grant would have been adequate, and therefore I don't think any defense agreement would have been possible.
The people of Malta have voted at the last general election, barely 4 months ago, for union with Britain.
Nell-awl is-semija ta' Campus FM għal program Storja Oġġett miegħi Emanuel Buttigieg u Liam Gauci. Bi-pjaċir magħna llum għandna lill-Dr. Maxine Anastasi, lecturer fid-Dipartiment tal-Istudji Klassiċi u l-Arkeoloġija fi ħdan il-Fakultà tal-Arti tal-Università ta' Malta. Hija kisbet id-dottorat tagħha fl-Arkeoloġija mill-Università ta' Oxford u riċerka tagħha tiffoka fuq il-fuħħar Ruman fiċ-ċentru tal-Mediterran b'enfasi fuq Malta. Hija ħadet sehem f'numri ta' skavi organizzati mill-Università ta' Malta fosthom f'tas-Silġ u ż-Żejtun u għarix-xieħ f'Imġarr ix-Xini Għawdex. Tuħsib ukoll it-taħriġ li għaddej waqt l-iskavi fil-Villa Romana taż-Żejtun u f'tas-Silġ. Palissa qed taħdem fuq numru ta' proġetti li qed iħarsu lejn il-fuħħar f'Malta u Għawdex, kif ukoll proġett fit-Tuneżija u l-Gżira ta' Pantellerija. Illum ma' Maxine ser inkun qed nitkellmu dwar anfora li ġejja mill-perjodu tardif Puniku jew minn dak Bikri Ruman, u li fil-fatt eżempji simili nsibuhom mhux biss Malta, imma anke Ġerba, Pantellerija, Sqallija u Tuneżija. Dejjem ifakker is-semmija tagħna li jistgħu jaraw ritratti li nkun qed nitkellmu fuqhom fuq il-Facebook pages tad-Dipartiment tal-Istorja u ta' Campus FM, u dal-programm partikolari ser ikun bl-Ingliż. Maxine, thank you so much for being with us. It's a real pleasure to have you as our guest.
Thank you for inviting me.
And to start you off, why this amphora? Can you describe it for us? What is an amphora?
I'll start by describing it. It's actually it's a small jug, very similar to a jar we would usually have at home, but made of clay, fired clay. So it doesn't actually revert back to a soft pulp. This particular amphora is actually quite small. It's you can find them in ranges between 15 to 50 centimeters.
Okay.
And it has a flat base. So unlike the traditional transport amphora you see, which Romans used to carry on their ships. The interesting thing about this particular amphora is that we are quite certain that it was produced in Malta towards the late Punic period and early Roman period. And on the image, what we're seeing is one that's found on the seabed off the coast of Schlendi in Gozo. But if the examples we find on land, these amphora have a nice bulbous body with a nice flat base and a cream-coloured slip or a coating on the surface, and then red-painted decorations on the body.
Okay.
And this is quite a typical Punic feature, which we see at other Punic centres in the Mediterranean as well, and it sort of typifies and separates what we identify as Punic culture as opposed to Greek culture in the Mediterranean at this time. The reason I chose this type of amphora is that I've been quite interested in it even when I was doing my research for my doctorate dissertation. And I'm primarily interested because it is one of the very few objects of the Punic and Roman periods that we are able to identify outside of the Maltese islands. And for my interest in studying the ancient economy and how people used to trade in the past, finding objects which we know are Maltese but are found abroad is quite significant, because these pots didn't move by themselves. It's basically people were taking them overseas.
So, in a nutshell, what we're saying is this amphora very likely was made in Malta, and examples like it are being found elsewhere.
Yes.
And that's the exciting part.
Yes.
Fantastic.
For the benefit of the listeners, this period when this amphora was made, Malta was under Rome, Carthage, were we in transit? What was the situation? Is the Second Punic War, the Third Punic War, or what are we talking
so
about
we're,
here?
So we're looking at really quite a few hundred years. In archaeology, it's very difficult to find specific dates.
Sorry, we're historians.
This is where we differ, but this is then where we work together.
Yes, where we work together.
So finding an object, what tends to happen is that people in the past used to use objects like this, but then throw them away. Now, if we think about today, when we throw out our rubbish, it doesn't remain in our house. We clear it up and we put it out on the streets. And so all the rubbish tends to go somewhere else. As archaeologists, we excavate ancient people's rubbish in order to find out their habits, a bit like detective work. The problem with that is that identifying dates can be quite difficult. So we don't have those specific, we know it went on one day as opposed to another. But through looking at a number of these objects, either in tombs or at, for instance, the sanctuary at Tassilch in Marsa Shlok, what we can determine really is a broad chronological period where we have been over the years comparing between dated coins, ancient calendar dates, and things like that. So for this particular period, we should say that we have evidence for these amphora that date from about 300, 350 BC, so before Christ. And the latest evidence comes to around 150 BC. So as you were saying, Liam, we are looking at the end of the Carthaginian influence and then pretty much the beginning of the Roman period. So the Romans historically
want to destroy Carthage.
And they took over Malta in 218 BC at the beginning of the Second Punic War. So we've got a nice view sort of archaeologically of a transition. Things were happening
and of course, you mentioned 218 BC. That's the political date.
Exactly.
But it doesn't mean that economically and socially, you know, you go to bed in the Carthaginian period and wake up into something radically different that's Roman.
Exactly.
No, it's going to take time. So, unless there's something really cataclysmic, I suppose.
And that's completely true. And I mean, even for something like this, we find some of the most exciting finds abroad, for instance, in Pantelleria and Tunisia, are these Punic amphora, which are being found in very early Roman contexts, sort of historically. So, but they are still keeping, I suppose, this Punic tradition in terms of culture, because, as you said, things do not happen overnight at all. They take sometimes even 100 years.
So, as an archaeologist and you're an expert in pottery, your eye is able to tell that something is still being done in a Phoenician manner versus something that's being done in a Roman manner.
There are telltale signs. We still don't know a lot. So the last 20, 30 years have been very good for pottery studies on Malta and the rest of the Mediterranean. So bit by bit, accumulating knowledge, reading papers, knowing what other people are working on, you are able to identify.
Tell us more about this. I'm intrigued.
What colors they were using, how well made or how quickly pots were molded on the potter's wheel,
the firing. Okay.
And objects so this is an amphora which would have probably been used, it's not, the jar itself wasn't of any importance. It was what was inside the jar.
A dispenser, probably. Yeah.
It was a bottle. Basically, how we view glass and plastic bottles, these were the ancient plastic or bottle.
What would it carry then?
So this is the million-dollar question, or million-euro question. We don't know for 100% yet. We do have projects, both with the Department of Classics and Archaeology and my colleagues, Professor Timmy Gambin and Dr. Inge John Bett, as well as some of my colleagues on the projects I'm working on in Punta Dera in Tunisia. And what we really want to do is start focusing on these amphora in order to carry out more scientific analysis in order to try and understand what material was in, being carried in them.
Earlier you started off by saying that has a flat bottom, and that seems to be an important clue. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
So the flat bottom from a functional side tells us that these were obviously being produced to be able to be stored and placed on flat surfaces, and they can stand on their own. Roman, or the typical Roman amphora, even the Phoenician amphora, tended to have round bottoms or bottoms which have what we would call a peg or a spike. And those were really designed for much larger capacity of contents like olive oil or wine, but also, and we know this from shipwrecks which have been excavated, that these spikes also were ideal for stacking in a very enclosed space in a cargo hold. Now, these are much smaller. The average Roman amphora is about a meter 10 in high, or tall, and they could carry up to 25 liters.
Okay.
These types of little jars carried perhaps 2.5, some from 0.5 liter to 2.5 liters of liquid content.
Is that indicative, therefore, of a more domestic kind of use?
Exactly. So
this is what you'd have in your house.
Exactly. So they are small enough to be sort of used even at home.
In fact, I was going to ask you, because sometimes wine was also diluted with water. So you can be maybe mixing wine with water in such a container.
Exactly. The interesting thing is that because we're seeing them in Schlendi at the bottom of the seabed, again, it's unlikely that someone was at the shore and throwing these amphora off, off there.
You have to have a pretty strong arm.
So what we are seeing is there was a sea vessel, which unfortunately for the sailors very fortunate for us.
We found flat-bottomed.
Exactly. This shipwreck encountered difficulty, sank, and we're seeing the surviving content.
Well, on that bittersweet note, we'll stop for a moment for a bit of music, but do stay with us as we continue to explore the subject with Dr. Maxine Anastasi.
Oh, you're gonna take me home tonight. Oh, down beside that red firelight. Oh, you're gonna let it all hang out. Fat bottom girls, you make the rocking world go round. Hey! I was just a skinny lad. Never knew no good for bad. But I knew life before I left my nursery. Left alone with big fat fatty. Was such a naughty natty. You big woman, you made a bad boy out of me.
So after that short break, let's continue talking to Dr. Maxine Anastasi about this very interesting object that we're talking about. I would like to now discuss what does this mean? You know, what we're in the Central Mediterranean, cultures are passing through. What was happening? What does this amphora indicate?
So, really, the fact that we've been able to, and I'm talking about sort of a broad range of different archaeologists and even classical historians, have been able to identify over the years clay objects in different locations in the Central Mediterranean. In fact, this sort of pet project of mine really stems from an article written in 1985 by the late Antonio Chasca, who was a renowned archaeologist studying the Punic period. And she actually was the first who did a survey around museums in the Central Mediterranean, in Sicily and Carthage, modern day Tunis.
Still Carthage for you.
I feel you.
Carthage Air Force. Identifying what she thought were Maltese amphora, very similar to this, because they are very distinctive. And that is something that's really important, because by being very distinctive, they can be identified quite easily.
What makes them distinctive then?
It is really the colour, that cream finish, and the red bands. Okay. If you find broken bits of these clay, then you have an added sort of benefit, in a sense, by being able to look at what we would call the section or the fabric of the clay. And that is really, you are able to look at the makeup of the clay, plus a lot of what we archaeologists call inclusions. And these inclusions are bits of stone, sand, crushed shell, which ancient potters and modern potters today added to the wet clay in order to improve its workability, its texture, and also its behavior. The important thing with that is that these rocks and sand tend to come from very close by the potter's workshop. So, as archaeologists, we can trace where certain types of rocks and minerals come from. And that then gives us a sort of geological signature of the region. So we, for instance, would know if we find in Malta amphora which have a lot of black volcanic material, we can be pretty confident that it comes from the region of Campania, around Naples, because sand around that area is very rich in volcanic material. From Tunisia and sort of ancient Carthage, they have a lot of quartz, rounded quartz, which is very typical of desert conditions. And their pottery is full of it. So by looking at the clay, you can also identify where the pots were made. And for Malta, we also have a specific fabric, which is very rich in yellow crushed limestone.
Of course.
We see limestone everywhere, and you can see it quite clearly in the clay itself. So not only from the finish, but also the clay, we can plot of the fine spots of both where these amphora were being made, and we're pretty confident it's Malta. But when, for instance, the excavation material I've been looking at, for instance, in Pantelleria and Carthage, because I am familiar with the Maltese clay, I can then identify it in a pottery assemblage in Tunisia. And then you've like, this pot didn't walk over, someone brought it over, and thus you have built a physical connection.
I am curious about the Pantelleria link, because today we don't really think of a connection with Pantelleria.
Well, they've got good sweet wine.
There's been over time, but I think in our recent memory, I don't think it figures. Mm-hmm. But clearly here you're seeing that there is something going on.
I mean, interestingly enough, the quantity, so the amount of examples of these amphora from Pantelleria are the most numerous we have come. So we have probably what we would class as a highest density or increased connectivity, because we're seeing a process repeating itself in Pantelleria. The reason Pantelleria in the Roman period, late Punic and Roman period, was a very strategic an important location, different to Malta because it doesn't have very good harbours, and it didn't have very good harbours in the past, but it is very close to northern Tunisia, where Carthage was, and also Punic Sicily, which was on the west, concentrated on the west coast of Sicily, and Pantelleria is right in the middle. So you have a strong link between those three locations.
Sometimes I actually think that Pantelleria strategically is better than Malta
for
this kind of thing. But they didn't have the harbour.
They didn't have the harbours, and they current evidence doesn't suggest that they had a very dense population. It's very different. From the research that I have sort of been looking into, Malta was much more closely aligned culturally and economically, probably with Libya, sort of Tripolitania in the past, and also eastern Sicily. We have a lot of evidence for eastern Sicilian wine.
Yes.
So the Maltese used to like drinking a lot of eastern Sicilian wine, even in the Roman period.
Up to the Knights period.
So that connection is very striking. And even sort of just tying it back into this type of amphora, the finish, so the colour and the decoration is very Punic, but the shape of the amphora is then a very Greek shape. So they take a lot of inspiration from Greece and merge them together.
That's a wonderful example of hybridity.
Completely. And I mean, it just shows that we've sort of been mixing and adapting our cultures and traditions since back into the late, since the Punic period, if not earlier.
Maxine, we're nearing the end of our interview. And you know, I would like to ask you one last question. If we can take something away from this amphora that tells us a little bit more about who we are as an island, what would it be?
And this is a little bit of conjecture from me. I still have a lot of work to do, a working hypothesis. I like to think of it as it really is concrete evidence for archaeologists about sort of being involved in a central Mediterranean network. We've always been sailing across sort of the Malta Channel, the Sicily Channel, and maintaining contacts with
all those around us.
North Africa, Sicily, all the islands, including Lampedusa, Pantelleria, and even Libya, in Cyrenaica, near Benghazi, we have even evidence of these amphoras. So I think this sort of connection is really apparent from these amphoras.
That's beautiful.
On that note, Dr. Maxine Anastasi, once again, thank you for coming on the show and sharing all this information with us. Once again, it's Liam Gauci and Emmanuel Buttigieg. We'll meet up next week.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Għadkom kem smajtu Storja u ġett, bi produzzjoni u prezentazzjoni ta' Emmanuel Buttigieg fl-imkien ma' Liam Gauci.